Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Wednesday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. It could not be a better day in America for us. Not only is the Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs, be a sub above, they bring sandwiches on Wednesday. But tonight is the NFL schedule release. I'm into it. You know how, you know, this stuff works for me. Schedule release, draft stuff. I like building stuff. And I just love the NFL schedule release tonight. We're going to have a party at the Herd Grotto tonight. Joy Taylor is joining me. I love this stuff. The week one schedule is already out, fired up.
Well, you also have a lot of theories around the schedule.
Yeah.
Like playing win-loss is my favorite game. Like you just go down like win-loss. You don't cross-check or anything. Like that's whatever your fan does. But you have a lot of theories around how the schedule plays out.
I do. So the NFL has released its schedule. And let me just say this. The NFL is really smart. They do a couple things really well. They understand that they're a television show. So they spread their events out and make them events. Every month has an event. You got free agency. You got the draft. You got the combine. You got the preseason. You got the schedule release. I mean, they put it right in the middle of the week, Wednesday, knowing that guys like me are going to talk about it today, Wednesday, tomorrow, Thursday, and some guys talk about it Friday. Put it right in the middle of the week. They drop it right before the NBA playoffs because sports is going to get a little cluttered here next week. So they put it right... They think about everything. And then when the NFL does have problems, they address them quickly. I mean, Major League Baseball has a 3-year problem. I don't know. Feels like a big deal. Nobody can hit anymore. You may want to address it. Crickets. NBA lost a third of its audience last 2 years. Stars don't play in the biggest games. You may want to address it. NFL changed their catch rule before the Super Bowl. Like in the game. Like, we got to make this better on television. So the schedule today is perfect. They think about everything. They think about everything in the NFL. Great example. Cowboys, Buccaneers. So you get the biggest brand in the NFL against the best team. And it's also, I think, going to be a competitive game. Because the Cowboys' offensive line is old. And you don't get 17 games out of it. But in week one, little Super Bowl win hangover for Tampa, loving themselves. They got the feels for themselves. Here comes Dallas. Zeke's healthy. O-line healthy. Competitive football game. But just look at how thoughtful they were here. So Jets-Panthers is a 1 o'clock game. Now, if you played that, Joy, in week 9, nobody cares. But Sam Darnold faces the team that dumped him week 1 and faces his heir apparent week 1. Hell yeah, I'm watching. That's exactly when you put that. That game is less interesting every week. By week 6, nobody cares. But they put it week 1. They thought about it. Seahawks at the Colts. 2 Super Bowl contenders. Browns at the Chiefs. AFC championship contenders. Oh, Dolphins, Patriots. When is Belichick most vulnerable? September. That's his history. So they bring in Brian Flores. It's Belichick against his protege. It could be 2 against Mac Jones. Then they go... Packers, Saints, 2 massive brands, they collide. Plus, we all want to watch that, right? Fox puts that the late game. Aaron Rodgers, even if he's there, he hates the team. He hates the GM. He's all upset. And then you go Monday night. Oh, by the way, Bears, Rams, NBC. Why does that matter? First of all, Chicago, LA, huge markets. But why it matters is because Matt Stafford and Sean McVay, there is a feeling in Vegas and the betting community, Stafford's going to have a massive year. So the NFL doesn't want to wait to start that story. The NFL week 1, they're going to put at night on NBC. They're going to put Matt Stafford and McVay. Week 1, Sean McVay has been a great September coach. A bunch of new tricks like Andy Reid in the offseason. He's a very good play designer. Suddenly you got Stafford with a big win. Stafford with a lot of points. It's not going to be cruddy weather. Bears in LA. Big brand. Matt Stafford, Sean McVay, and the story's rolling. That Monday Night Football, John Gruden used to broadcast on it. John Gruden and the Raiders host the Ravens. By the way, if the Raiders were at Baltimore, it could be a blowout. But in Vegas, so you're going to get the Cowboys against the Super Bowl champs, Vegas, Los Angeles. Here's the other thing. Here's how smart they are. This is a true story. What I'm about to tell you is a true story. And this is where the NFL works very well with their TV partners. So the 4 o'clock window, 4:25 on Fox, they have the Broncos game against the Giants and the Packers game. Color me non-coincidental if Aaron Rodgers does go to the Broncos. Fox doesn't have to change the games. Fox has them both. So if Aaron goes, I'm going to Denver, get me out of here, Fox has both the Green Bay game and the Denver game. They cover themselves. That is thoughtful. That is smart. Years ago, not many years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, I'm not going to say the network, but one of the networks literally had to call Major League Baseball about their schedule. I'm not going to tell you who. I'm not going to tell you the network, Fox. We had to call Major League Baseball and say, you know, can we help you with your schedule? Why are you putting all these like Cub, Cardinal, Dodger, Giant games in the week? Why don't you put your biggest rivalries on the weekend? The TV network had to go to the sport and tell them how to schedule. In the NFL knows how to schedule, but they work with their television partners. I would guess putting a Bronco-Packer game back-to-back same time slot is protection hedging your bet if Aaron goes to Denver. I don't think it's a coincidence. Maybe it is. But nobody wants in the media loves to give the NFL credit because the NFL doesn't need the media and the media wants to be needed and they don't need you. They don't need me. They don't need anybody. But they are so much smarter and better run just with their schedule. They thought of everything. To put Darnold against the Jets in week one is brilliant. That game is useless potentially by week six when the Jets are 1-5. It means nothing. But in week one, a little revenge game for Sam Darnold at home against the team that dumped him. I'm watching. Really smart. All right. One team got a terrible break. I'll get to that later. But let's start with this. So the Lakers-Knicks played last night. It was a really entertaining game. I've watched a couple of back-to-back Knicks games. They're feisty and fun. And it was a big, meaningful win for the Lakers because New York's a real team. And they won it in overtime. LeBron didn't play. Dennis Schroeder didn't play. Alex Caruso got hurt very early. AD was not 100%. And they beat a feisty New York Knicks team. It was also a game that highlighted the problem with the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks, it's a baby step league. You don't go from the Knicks crappy to winning the title. Same with the Phoenix Suns this year. This game really highlighted the New York Knicks. They just don't have enough juice. You play hard in the NBA. It's a classic Tom Thibodeau team. He grinds his players. The practices are longer. They play more minutes. They play harder. That wins you 45, 50 games in the regular season. But teams are exhausted by the postseason, and his teams lack juice and energy in the postseason. And if you looked at the Knicks last night, I mean, this is what is going to be their problem in the playoffs. Derrick Rose, old rickety Derrick Rose, is often their leading or second leading scorer. So it was like Julius Randle, Derrick Rose, and the rest of the team shot 13 of 38. Meanwhile, the Lakers are built for the playoffs. And a prime example is, A, we know they have experience in the playoffs. B, they have a coach who's experienced in the playoffs. But if you look at the box score, you had Anthony Davis dropping 20. Andre Drummond dropped 16. Kyle Kuzma gave you 23. Horton Tucker gave you 13. And LeBron and Schroeder didn't play. So you'd have had two more guys in double figures. With the Knicks, Julius Randle 31, Derrick Rose 27, and a bunch of guys with 2 and 4. So you can't win in the playoffs when you need juice. You need guys who can, you need five guys who can drop 20. The Lakers are really built for the playoffs. And last night was a great example for the Lakers. That's why they're going to be a playoff team. And I think they're going to be a really good playoff team as long as LeBron is like 85, 90% healthy. They just got a bunch of guys who can create their own shot or give you 20 on any night. And the Knicks don't. It's kind of Julius Randle, cross your fingers, RJ Barrett's young and hot. Can he? Last night he couldn't shoot. So it showed you a lot last night. It showed you the Knicks have a foundation. They play hard, but boy, you can see their ceiling. They struggled last night late in the fourth quarter in overtime to get shots. They struggled to get shots. Well, guess what? Milwaukee in the East, like the Lakers last night, they play real defense. I mean, Philadelphia can play real defense. Ben Simmons up there on defense. So now Brooklyn doesn't play any defense, but, you know, Milwaukee does. Miami Heat's historically Spoelstra teams do. The Knicks have a real ceiling, and you saw it last night. And the Lakers, without two of their three best players, won a game, bunch of guys jumped in and scored. That shows you why they haven't been a good regular season team, but why they're built for the playoffs. Can't wait. It was a very, very entertaining game. So coming up next, listen, it's only one game. So we know week one of the NFL schedule. But God, did one team get the worst break in the world? We'll talk about that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Get ready for the biggest season ever with the release of the 2021 NFL schedule tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and NFL Network. Don't miss the first look at the entire 17-game regular season. Plus, starting tonight, fans can purchase single-game tickets at NFL.com/tickets. And we've got a sneak peek of the Week 1 slate here on Fox. In the 1 p.m. window, we've got Eagles at Falcons, Vikings at Bengals, 49ers at Lions, and Seahawks at Colts. And in the late afternoon window, we've got America's Game of the Week, Packers at Saints, Broncos at Giants.
One team got a really bad break. I know, Cleveland.
I'm picking on you.
Cleveland got a bad break. They got the worst break in the league. Cleveland's a good football team. I think they're the best over bet. 9.5 wins. I think they're a 10-11 win team. They got a terrible break. Andy Reid is the best September coach in football. That's who the Browns open with at Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes, under Andy Reid in September, is 10-0 with 32 touchdowns and zero interceptions. It is the last place you want to play Kansas City. Andy Reid's the best NFL coach in September, and he's the best NFL coach off a bye, and week one is essentially off a bye. Andy Reid buries his play sheet until week one. Go ask Belichick. He's humiliated Belichick in September. Also, Cleveland's going to have 8 or 9 new defensive starters. So in week 9 or 10, this is a tug of war. This is a real game. In week 1, 9 new defensive starters against the best game play designer in the NFL and the best quarterback at home. Now, the good news, Cleveland, you're used to not winning in week 1. You haven't won a week 1 game in 17 years, so you'll be 0-1. And you'll overcome it because you're a really good team. You have a really good coach. But that is a bad scheduling break. You know, again, Pittsburgh is not a team that I'm fond of this year, but in week 1, they're healthy. Big Ben's at his best early. He deteriorates. These old quarterbacks get worse late, right? Big Ben in September, he'll give you a game. Pittsburgh would be better served, because they don't have a bunch of new defensive faces. Pittsburgh would be better served to go to Kansas City and compete week 1. Not a team with 9 defensive starters that are learning a system from other teams. This is a bad break for Cleveland. I still think they're a really good team next year. This is Baker Mayfield. Just to show you Cleveland's history in week 1, Baker Mayfield has 2 starts week 1. He lost 43-13 and 38-6. So I'm not going to do a blazing 5, but I will bet some games today. Uncle Colin does not waste opportunities to make some lettuce. If I did a blazing 5 today, because the lines often never get better on Fox Bet, here's the best lines. Seattle +3 at Indianapolis. Seattle tends to be, again, same coach, same quarterback, many of the same weapons. Indianapolis has a new quarterback. And their best young receiver, Michael Pittman's never worked with Carson Wentz. I think the Colts are going to be really good. I don't know how good they're going to be in week 1. Last year they lost to the Jags in week one. So I would take Seattle in the points in week one. Atlanta -1.5. Now, you know Atlanta burns me every year, but Atlanta actually got beat up last year. Atlanta now adds Kyle Pitts. They get Arthur Smith, a really, really smart offensive mind, is their head coach. And they face a Philadelphia team at home. They only have to give up, put it up again, only have to give up 1.5 points. I think Atlanta's a really good bet. I think the Philadelphia Eagles made a just an egregiously bad hire at head coach. I would take Atlanta -1.5 against Philadelphia. I would actually take the Cowboys +4.5 against Tampa, because that line is probably going to get bet up to about 5.5. Brady's going to get curry a lot of the favor of the general public. People are going to say, oh, Cowboys are going to get blown out. Not in week one. Not really in week one. When you win the Super Bowl and you're having parades and you're throwing the trophy around the Tampa Bay, week one, you could be a little sluggish, a little Super Bowl hangover. It's hard to get guys, you know, motivated for week one. And Dallas's offensive line and Zeke will be healthy week one. Dak's got a lot to prove. He's got a big new contract. Dak wants to prove he can compete. He's worth the money. I would take Dallas and the points. Chargers at the Washington football team. Now, I like the Chargers a lot this year, but they have a brand new offensive line and a brand new coach, and they are facing Ron Rivera's defensive front, which is outstanding. So you're taking the Chargers, who I think are going to be really good. That is a tough opener. On the road, 6-hour flight, veteran head coach, the system's already implemented, and you got Brandon Staley, who's very, very good, but boy, oh boy, that's a lot to chew off in week one. I'd probably take the Washington football team. It's a pick 'em. And Kansas City -4.5 against the Browns, that number's going to end up 5 or 6. That's the best number you're going to get. Kansas City's going to curry a lot of favor with the bettors, so I would take Kansas City -4.5. That's today. I think the best bets on the board. What do I know except everything? All right, Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
It's been a good couple of weeks for you. The draft
schedule,
Aaron Rodgers drama.
Oh my gosh, schedule, maze balls.
And we got the gift. It's almost like Christmas, you know. God's gift to us with Tebow.
Yeah, oh, that was a big story yesterday.
In the middle of the week. Well, there's a lot of skepticism about Jags potentially signing Tim Tebow as a tight end. And apparently the same attitude is circulating among the Jags coaching staff. According to Jeff Darlington, there is serious disagreement within the organization about signing the former quarterback. Beyond the emotional side of this and beyond the wonders of why, is just the reality that it's really not practical. It's really not likely to work. Urban Meyer would say, hey, I'm going to add anybody to my team who has the potential to better this organization, to which you could look at this and say, how is this going to better the organization? There's really not very much upside at all.
You're asking Tim Tebow out of the league for 8 years to become a new position. That's like asking a punter out of the league for 8 years to become a kicker. Well, they're both kickers. Not really. They're specialists. To be a quarterback and a tight end are two totally different positions. It's like saying, well, you work at a hospital. Yeah, but a pediatrician's not a brain surgeon. They're both doctors.
Well, if punters and kickers were the same position, tight ends and quarterbacks were the same position, why do you need extra roster spots for those specific positions? They're not the same job.
And the tight end position, I would argue this, Joy, the tight end position in football has changed more than any position in football. It is now often where you put an incredible athlete. You know, for years and years, it was like if you couldn't block, you couldn't play the position.
Right.
It's like Travis Kelce's not going to block. Nobody cares. The bottom line is Kyle Pitts from Florida. He's not really a blocker. He went fourth. The bottom line now, you put it's the place where you put that 6'5.5 athlete.
Who's incredibly fast.
That has too good of hands to put on defense.
Yep.
Like it's become, you start looking at the tight end position in the NFL and you're like, they can become leading receivers. Travis Kelce's their top target. So Tebow, 7 years ago, wasn't athletic enough to be tight end. Now the position's become hyper-athletic.
Well, Tebow hasn't been great since college.
Right.
He had a moment of good. And, I mean, listen, everyone laughed at the baseball thing. I think he did well at baseball. I mean, he did better than a lot of baseball players have done over the years.
It was a fun story.
It's a fun story. Look, people are mad at the opportunities that Tim Tebow gets, and I understand that. It feels very unfair.
Yeah.
It's more about who you know than what you're actually capable of. But with this situation, and what Jeff Darlington is referring to, is what you don't want to do in bringing in Tim Tebow is leave so many questions about how it is you are actually building your organization. Are you truly interested in bringing in the best people for the job? Because there is no question there are better people for the job than Tim Tebow.
Of course.
It's without question. The worst tight end that got cut last year in the league is better than Tim Tebow right now.
Of course.
So what is the actual reason? Now, you floated a theory yesterday.
Pension.
Which could entirely be possible. Right now, Tim Tebow is vested 3 years in the league, so his pension is around a little less than $20,000.
A year.
A year, yes. If he's vested as a four-year player, it goes up significantly.
Doubles.
I mean, it's very difficult to get the exact numbers on all of this, but if he basically plays three or four more games and he's vested as a four-year player, it's going to go up significantly. It's going to go up to $60,000 or $70,000 a year from $20,000. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but if you play three more games in the NFL, hey, I get extra money for coming in as a check every year for the rest of my life. Now, that seems a bit hacky that you would sign Tim Tebow to play three games for that amount of money that Tim could probably make doing an appearance. It feels a little forced. It feels like there's too many questions around it for
feels
it to
hokey.
Be just, yes. So the Lions were on the phone with a final offer to trade up when the Falcons were on the clock with the fourth overall pick. They obviously ended up taking Kyle Pitts. But in a video the Falcons posted yesterday from inside their draft room in their war room, Atlanta general manager Terry Fontenot takes a call from the Lions when the Falcons are on the clock.
Ooh, let's see.
Lions. Hey, what's up, man? Good, good.
You got Detroit on the line, dude, too.
Yeah, we're in there. It's the same. It's what we talked about. Okay, yeah, we're in there. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. All right.
So the GM and presumably the Lions GM have a short conversation that they show there, basically saying this is not a better deal than we had already talked about. We're going to go ahead and pick and take Kyle Pitts. Now, we don't know who the Lions were targeting. They obviously ended up taking Penei Sewell at 7.
Which is good because Goff needs a good O-line. Now, Jared Goff's a different quarterback. Bad O-line, good O-line. I honestly think Kyle...
I like that pick. I'm so curious to know who they were trying to trade up to take. They couldn't have been trying to trade up for Penei Sewell.
Who are you talking, Detroit?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they wanted Kyle Pitts.
Can you do that if you're Detroit?
I think Kyle Pitts is so great. They lost Kenny Golladay. I actually think Detroit's better off, actually. Kyle Pitts works with a veteran quarterback, and I like Atlanta's O-line.
Right.
Jared Goff needed Penei Sewell, or he wouldn't have time to throw to Kyle Pitts.
So that's insane.
I actually think Detroit and Atlanta got the perfect player for them.
But you think that Detroit was trying to take a swing for Kyle Pitts?
Yes. I think they were. I don't think I never bought into this. The Carolina's going to draft another quarterback, and Detroit's going to draft. I never bought those stories at all.
I mean, I don't know. I'd like to know. I think you're probably right because why do you make that move for Jared Goff? And I think that Jared Goff is good enough that you can build around him, like we've seen
as
if
long
he gets
as
the right
has,
coaching.
If you give Jared Goff 3.5 seconds, he'll complete passes. He showed when it gets down to 3 seconds or 2.75, it's not the same quarterback.
Things start to fall apart. All right. Well, Oakland, I don't know what to tell you. Oakland Athletics reportedly have permission from MLB to seek relocation with the team's current ballpark situation in limbo. The A's have been trying to get a new stadium for years, but the plans keep getting tied up by government officials. According to Jeff Passan, the current proposal involves the Athletics privately funding $1 billion for the stadium. The team is asking for an $855 million commitment from the city for infrastructure improvements, and they're also seeking $400 million to be funded by the taxpayers.
Good luck in California getting that.
Well, according to the mayor's office, the city said it's willing to bear its resources to help make the vision a reality. However, the requests for public investment at the high end of projects of this type nationwide, they're not.
Bottom line is Silicon Valley has trillion-dollar days. At some point, if the A's are going to remain in Oakland, go to Silicon Valley and say, hey, any of you guys like baseball? We'll give you a big chunk of the team.
You can't ask taxpayers
to
pay $400 million in the city of Oakland for a stadium.
No, not in, especially in California. New York and California. Good luck going to your taxpayers and asking for more money.
Anywhere. We just came out of a pandemic. We're still in a pandemic, actually. Like, we're still in a pandemic. You can't ask. Before the pandemic, you couldn't ask for this money. But $400 million for a stadium is absurd. I get it. The stadiums do bring in an incredible amount of revenue to the cities. They can provide a boost for the communities that they're in. Or they can do quite the opposite and not provide a huge influx of money into the area. I mean, a great example of this is Marlins Park, which was funded by the taxpayers and was pretty much the crown jewel of why you don't get taxpayer money to build these stadiums anymore.
Boondoggle. That's been a total boondoggle.
The park is beautiful. It's great, but it was supposed to just have all these stores and shops.
Nothing.
It's a billion-dollar organization. You make plenty of money. Pay for the stadium yourselves. You cannot ask taxpayers to give $400 million for a stadium.
Good stuff, Joy, with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
All right, we're getting close to the playoffs here. And you can tell in the last four or five games, you can tell the league gets more amped up. I mean, the Lakers and the Knicks last night, at the end of those games, those teams were playing playoff defense. Like, the Lakers were desperate, and the Knicks, who don't have a lot of offensive juice, couldn't get their own shot. I watched the Clippers-Knicks Sunday. It felt like a playoff game. You can feel now the effort ramping up, some desperation for teams here and some seeding. Let's bring on Nick Wright, my buddy, First Things First, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. I said this yesterday about the Knicks. They're a regular season team. If you play hard,
that's right,
you can win half your games. But everybody plays hard in the playoffs, and they'll be exposed. But I will say this. For the first time in 20 years, I like watching them. I kind of feel like there's something. The house has a foundation. Well, your thoughts on them overall?
Well, my thoughts on them are, if they happen to move back up to the four and get Atlanta in round one, then they could win a playoff series. They could beat Atlanta. Anyone else they play in round one, they're drawing dead against. Whether it's Miami, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn, they've got no shot. However, what is more, and it's a great job by Thibodeau, great job by Derrick Rose, and Julius Randle's having a phenomenal season. Where the Knicks matter to the bigger NBA landscape is this. If you watched that game yesterday, Colin, that's what they do to everyone. They beat the hell out of you. And if you are Milwaukee or Brooklyn and you have real championship aspirations, the difference between getting the Knicks in round one versus Charlotte or Atlanta or one of the other teams you could get coming out of the play-in moving up to seven is massive. The Knicks are going to take a hunk of flesh out of whomever they play. So all of a sudden, that three seed is not as attractive as it otherwise would be. Like, it's going to be very interesting to see where the Knicks fall, because whomever they play, whomever beats the Knicks in round one is going to be going into round two limping a bit, and I think that's going to matter.
You know, it's funny. I hear all these Laker fans, oh, we don't want the Warriors. And I'm like, the Warriors are a tiny team. The Lakers at Drummond, they're a huge team. I would like the Lakers in that matchup. But in your opinion, are you concerned about the Lakers in a one-game situation if LeBron's back and AD? Are you concerned about a play-in game for them?
No. I don't think the Lakers are going to end up in the play-in, because I think Portland's about to lose two out of three and the Lakers will slide to the six. But if when LeBron comes back, he doesn't look immediately fully functional, if it looks like he's going to need some time to ramp up, not only am I not worried about the play-in, I would argue the play-in could be preferable than going into the playoffs as the sixth seed and facing the Clippers in round one. You know, I did not at all believe in the Clippers last year, and while I don't believe in them as a championship team this year, they are better than they were last year. And people are like, oh, the play-in, there is no concern of the play-in. The Warriors would have to beat you, and then the Spurs or Grizzlies would have to beat you 2 days later. That's not happening. I think the bigger concern is if Schroeder's just getting back off the COVID list, if AD is, you know, still dealing with little nicks and bruises, and LeBron doesn't have his wind yet, and immediately in the first round of the playoffs, if you're the sixth seed, you get the Clippers, that could be tough. I think what would be preferable to that is staying at the seven, waxing the Warriors or the Grizzlies in the one-game play-in, And then you get Phoenix or you get Utah, neither of which can deal with the Lakers. So that's the long way of saying the play-in does not concern me in the least. I think it actually might be preferable in some circumstances.
Listen, I never get more hate mail than when I criticize Tim Tebow. And I said yesterday, it's time for somebody to tell Tim it's time to get a real job. Like, baseball was fun. Football was great. Like, you've been out of the league 8 years. Go be a broadcaster. You're terrific at that. That's my takeaway on the Tebow thing. He's a nice kid. Everybody feels like, oh, I'd like my daughter to marry Tim Tebow. But this is like folly, right? Like, you don't buy the Tebow thing to the Jags.
Colin, you said he's a nice kid. He's my age. And Colin, if I had been out of broadcasting for a decade and I called you up, you're my Urban Meyer, and I'm like, Colin, I think I got to get back into the game. I need you to give me a gig. Do you know what you would do as a friend? You'd say, Nick, the dream's over, buddy. You had a good run, or maybe you didn't. But either way, at some point, you got to get a real job. And at some point, you've got to move on past what was your childhood dream. My 7-year-old, God love her, you know, these days this will make you laugh. She doesn't want to be an actress. She wants to be a YouTuber. And so good for her. Maybe that'll work out. But if when she's 35, she's like, Dad's still going to be a YouTuber. And I didn't say, honey, you gotta get a real job now. Somebody, what you said yesterday is spot on. And I am, you know Urban far better than I do, but I have massive respect for Urban Meyer. I'm shocked he's doing this. Jacksonville, to me, had great momentum. They hired the right coach, and they got the lottery ticket of Trevor Lawrence, the winning lottery ticket of Trevor Lawrence. Why they are acting like this is a literal minor league baseball team, and you've got to bring in the little person to take at bats and then the 7-footer to take at bats to draw fans into the stands. This is the NFL. And so I'm surprised by this. I don't get it. I have no reason to believe he'll be good at it. And it just doesn't seem like something Jacksonville, which finally had some positive momentum, needed to do.
Yeah, I think the reason you hired Urban Meyer was to feel bigger, and this makes him feel smaller. Finally.
Yeah, I agree entirely.
Yeah, I like Cleveland this year. I do not like them at all with 9 new defensive starters at Arrowhead Week 1. I think it's the one game I looked at and I thought, good God, if there was one game Cleveland didn't want, you wouldn't mind playing New England Week 1. Belichick struggles in September. You wouldn't have minded that Packer game Week 1 because it seems like Aaron Rodgers resents the organization. Browns Chiefs Week 1. I imagine you like Kansas City in this one?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll do win-loss like you do win-loss, and it's going to be hard for me to find a loss for the Chiefs. They're angry. They got the new left tackle. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated, but preliminarily speaking, probably 16-1 with them resting people in Week 17. Anybody that had to come to Arrowhead Week 1, it was going to be tough.
Yeah.
The Browns, what I will say for the Browns is this. Their last experience in Arrowhead, while it was a playoff loss, it's not like they got totally outclassed in that game. Now, Mahomes went down, which changed the trajectory of it. But I actually think that can be here's why I think it can be a good thing for Cleveland. If everyone can agree the road to the Super Bowl goes through Arrowhead, which since Mahomes has been there, that's the case. They've gone to 2, and the one they didn't get to, Brady beat them in Arrowhead. You get to see how close you are. Immediately, Week 1, you get to see, all right, we're measuring ourselves against the best in our conference. Where do we need to get better? Where are we already good? What are our deficiencies? And then we hope to see you again 4 months from now. So I don't think it's the only terrible outcome possible is if the Browns somehow win, and that's a terrible outcome for you. I'll be fine. The Chiefs will be fine. For Colin, if Baker, after winning a playoff game, probably fresh off a new contract, goes into Arrowhead, Joy, you better be ready to step in because first Monday of the NFL season, Uncle Colin might have the Baker flu. Might miss a Monday NFL show for the first time in years. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Either do I. First of all, Mahomes in September. Not only is he 10-0, what was the number?
32-0. Touchdowns,
interceptions. 32 touchdowns, no picks. He's a good player. Yeah. I think he's going to do well.
All right, buddy. Good seeing you. Nick Wright. All right. Great stuff. By the way, people just say awful things to me when I, say that Tim Tebow to the Jags feels like a Ted Lasso story. Players are not going to buy that in the locker room. But it is interesting. One of the comments about that from apparently somebody inside the organization. Not everybody in Jacksonville likes it. Some thoughts on that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Still running your business on QuickBooks? Call it Quicksand. Bigger the company grows, the faster you sync with outdated software. Go to NetSuite, offering one-of-a-kind financing. NetSuite.com/herd. So according to Jeff Darlington, very good NFL reporter, breaks a lot of stories. He said, not everybody, obviously Urban Meyer's the one behind this, not everybody in the Jags building is thrilled with this, Darlington said. They don't think that it's necessarily sending the proper message to the rest of the team in the locker room and the guys trying to make the team. That was my question yesterday. What's the message? And I do think Jacksonville's Gator territory, so it will be accepted in Jacksonville. It would be laughed at in New York, laughed at in L.A., laughed at in Denver. Big cities would just roll their eyes, laughed at. But I do think in the South, in Jacksonville, which is really a better college football town than a pro football town, people will buy into it. But Urban Meyer went on the Chris Collinsworth podcast yesterday and extrapolated, kind of gave the story context, which I thought was a smart thing for him to do.
We have not signed Tim. There's a thought going around. He was in the best shape of his life, asked to see if he could work out with a couple of our coaches. I wasn't even there. And they came back to me and said, wow, this guy's in incredible shape. And I said, then I went another time and watched him try him out. And they said, go work on these things. He comes back later. They try him out again. I'm not there. And they come in and they said, wow, this guy's ball skills. He's a great athlete. He looks like he's 18 years old, not 20, whatever he is, 33. And I said, guys, you don't understand. Now, this guy is, he's the most competitive maniac you're ever going to talk to. And let's give it a shot.
Tim was also the most competitive maniac in minor league baseball and in better shape than anybody at AA. He still couldn't hit. Tim was in the best shape I've ever seen any NFL quarterback. Remember that shot when he was walking in the rain in New York with his shirt off and he couldn't throw football? If being in great shape got you to the pros, then every HGH and steroid freak at Gold's Gym would be in the NFL. But they all walk like this because they're stiff and they're overlifted and they're not athletes. They just look good with their shirt off. And Tim looks great with his shirt off. I'll give you an example. T.O. is still ripped at 47. Shannon Sharp at 52. And Ocho Cinco. T.O. has one of the best NFL bodies of all time. He tried out for the Seahawks in his late 30s. He took his shirt off, worked out, and he looked the part. But he couldn't separate. And T.O. at one point was a great NFL player. Tim Tebow was bad. I know he had a win streak. I know. We all know. But he is a notch below Taysom Hill athletically. And Taysom Hill, in my opinion, not a franchise quarterback. This is not anti-God or anti-Tebow. It's pro-reality. Is that if being in shape mattered or being a maniac mattered, well, then Tim Tebow would have been a star in baseball and a star in football. It doesn't matter. Tim Tebow is 6'2". There are no 6'2 tight ends in the NFL, especially now. He's never played tight end. He was not particularly athletic when he did play. He had a dream. He had a love. He had a passion. But he was a 4.7 40 guy. I mean, that's not Cam. That's not Kyler Murray. That's not Lamar Jackson. Justin Herbert, bigger, stronger, faster, better arm, faster. Justin Herbert's a much better athlete than Tim Tebow in every box. But Justin Herbert hasn't put his faith out there. He didn't win a Heisman. He didn't win a national title. He's not iconic. He's just way better at everything. So it's not anti-Tim, but if you knew you can wear the chef jacket and you can buy new knives, doesn't make you Bobby Flay. Oh, he loves to cook. Everybody loves to cook. Everybody wants to open a restaurant because they got a chili con carne recipe that mom loves. Doesn't make you Bobby Flay. Hour two, next.